This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Some of the best franchises in film have come from the litany of literary characters. James Bond, Harry Potter, The Lord of the Rings. They've all wowed readers before wowing audiences. But can an eccentric art dealer with his mustachioed might make movie magic? Find out as we attempt to prove to you that Mordecai is not that bad. Welcome, welcome, one and all, to It's Not That Bad, the podcast that looks for A grades in B movies. And we have a fun one for you that has been a long time in the making. But first, I want to welcome back my lovely wife, Carrie. It's been a while since you've been on the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. I was beginning to worry that two things. I was worried that we would actually never be talking about this movie, you know, since I pitched it about a year ago, circa 2022, I don't know, somewhere around there. And I was beginning to worry I was getting fired because I missed the mic.
Right?
Well, and I'm here to rock the mic, and I'll rock it well.
Well, the mic has definitely missed you, that is for sure. So I'm sure the listeners have as well. And dear listeners, she's not kidding. We were talking about doing this film, I think back in like January or February of this year, it kind of hit our list.
It was definitely winter. In fact, I like to think that it was, you know, somewhere last year.
Yeah. It was becoming almost like the running gag. like the Jimmy Kimmel, Matt Damon joke, right? Where it's like, you know, you do like a couple of weeks of episodes. It's like, okay, so we're going to do Mordecai. Yeah. We'll watch Mordecai. We'll watch Mordecai. And we never would watch Mordecai. And then finally we're sitting down one night and like, what the hell we're going to watch? Oh, I got Mordecai in a stick. Are we actually going to do this? Is this actually going to happen? And it actually did happen. And lo and behold, we're now here finally talking about it.
Trust me when I say that I didn't actually believe that we would be doing this and recording this until this moment.
Yeah.
This makes it real. This makes it happen. But even after we watched the movie, I mean, it's been what? A week ago?
It's been about a week since we've actually watched the film.
I hope I remember.
This has been like the snuffleupagus of movies for us. It's like...
it really has.
Yeah, we keep talking about it and we know it's there and all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is actually happening.
Something else always comes up.
Yeah, because... Now, that being said, we've had wonderful guests who have come on and done wonderful episodes about some really, really good movies. I say in quotation marks because the movies haven't always been that good, but they've been fun records nevertheless. But now it is time to talk Mordecai. But before we do, you're going to have to wait just another minute or so because it is time to take this long anticipated movie and trailerize it.
Okay, you got 2 minutes. Go.
In the high-stakes world of art, one man looks to make his mark. Meet Mordecai, a bon vivant of such impeccable taste and talent, recruited by MI5 to help track down a painting that holds a secret. Along the way, he will battle Russians, the Yakuza, and Jeff Goldblum in order to track it down. Nope, scratch that. He'll bumble his way while his faithful manservant does all the dirty work. He's just out to prove to the world that chicks dig mustaches. They do, right? Okay, asking for a friend. Witness the answer to the question, can a movie featuring multiple Oscar nominees and based on a book series from the 70s still crap the bed? Try not to vomit when you come face to mustache in Mordecai. Rated R for regurgitation reflex.
Oh, come on. Okay, now, I did not know until this moment that it was a book series.
Yes, and that was actually the first thing I was going to bring up. So thank you for leading me into this one here. This film is actually based on the Mordecai novels, specifically the novel Don't Point That Thing at Me by Kirill Bonfilio or Bonfilii. Or Bonfilioli? I'm going to give it one more try, okay?
It starts already.
Bonfilioli. Ooh. I probably messed that up still, but that is as close as you're going to get.
But it sounded good.
Kirill Bonfilioli. Yeah, there we go. That's it. That's where I leave it this here. But let's talk about who's in this film. The movie stars Johnny Depp, Gwyneth Paltrow, Ewan McGregor, Olivia Munn, Paul Bettany, Michael Culkin, and Jeff Goldblum. Hell of a cast, right?
Oh my God,
hell
yes.
Hell of a cast. However, there's an almost starring in this one. In the role of Joanna, of course, as played by Gwyneth Paltrow, it was almost Carice Van Houten. That's who the producers wanted. Most people will know her as Melisandre in Game of Thrones, but it went to Gwyneth Paltrow instead. The movie is directed by David Koepp. He previously directed Stir of Echoes. Most recently, he directed You Should Have Left. So he's got a decent filmography under his belt. However, this film, at the 36th Razzie Awards, Johnny Depp was nominated for Worst Actor. He lost to Jamie Dornan in 50 Shades of Grey. Gwyneth Paltrow was nominated for Worst Actress. She lost to Dakota Johnson for 50 Shades of Grey. And Johnny Depp and his glued-on mustache were nominated for Worst Screen Combo. Yes, that's actually the screen combo that was nominated.
Not him and Gwyneth Paltrow.
No, Johnny,
the mustache.
Johnny Depp and his glued-on mustache.
Oh.
They, of course, lost to Jamie Dornan and Dakota Johnson for 50 Shades of Grey. Are you seeing a pattern here this year? But we're not done there yet. At the 9th Houston Film Critics Society Awards, the film was nominated for the Worst Picture, lost to Pixels that year. At the 2016 Yoga Awards, yes, there's a Yoga Awards, Depp actually won for Worst Foreign Actor. And at the 2016 Odyssey Awards, Depp was once again nominated for Worst Acting Performance. He lost to Adam Sandler in Pixels. And that's not the worst shame of it all. The film had a budget of $60 million, according to IMDb. Domestically, it grossed $7.6 million on a $60 million budget. And worldwide grossed $47 million. When it was released on the January 23rd, 2015 weekend, it debuted at number 9 with only $4.2 million. The top grossing film that week at number 2 was The Boy Next Door, debuting with $14.9 million. The highest grossing film in its fifth week was American Sniper, which brought in $64 million. Also debuting that weekend was Strange Magic at $5.5 million in position number 7. However, you know how I say there's an asterisk on movies that saw theatrical releases in 2020, right? Because obviously things were shut down, right? In Australia, in December of 2020, they were putting some movies in theaters, like bringing them back to, you know, for weekends, you know, one-offs here, one-offs there kind of thing, right? So on the December 17th weekend, in one theater in Australia in 2020, this film was re-released. It made a whopping $22.
Oh, for that one person who went to it?
No. Two people.
Oh.
Do you know how I know it was two people?
Because each ticket was 11?
It had to be. Because also, in one theater on that weekend in Australia, the re-release of the second best exotic Marigold Hotel made $11. So you have to think that
two people,
probably a couple, went to go see Mordecai. Probably after waiting 4 or 5 years before saying, are we really going to watch Mordecai now? Is this going to happen?
Okay, but was it It was during like the heat of lockdowns and COVID. So
in Australia, no less. And we remember like New Zealand was very, very heavy lockdown during COVID. Australia. And again, this is an older film being put in the theaters because there's really nothing else being produced out there. So I get it.
Can we just give props to the two people who braved going to the theater, going to the cinema to enjoy this movie?
Well, you know,
excellent choice. Right on.
I mean, I give full kudos to movie theaters for making it through. Because, I mean, that had to be tough. That really had to be tough, like, for movie theaters and movie theater owners to get through that time.
So, not only when they came back, like, there were restrictions. So they had to, like, block half of the seats that they could potentially sell.
Yeah, you had to be,
sell.
Like, 5 seats away from everybody else around you kind of thing. Like, it was tough for movie theaters. And I know me personally, like, I love going to the movie theater. I do. And I know you do too.
I do.
And I know you love it when you and I go together. And I know we love it even more when the kids aren't with us.
Oh. They're going to listen to this episode.
They don't listen to us. They don't listen to us in real life. What are they going to do? Listen to us in a podcast?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no.
Kids? These are the opinions expressed by your father. Do not necessarily reflect those of your mother.
No one listens to us, you know, as it is, let alone our kids listen to us. So, you know, we could pretty much say anything at this point and we could get away with it because there's no one out there listening.
I'm going to start like mooing or baaing.
That should be the trick, right? We should literally have a contest. You know, I'm going to meow X number of times during this show. Woof. And if you can count the number of meows, you win a prize. The prize is surviving listening to the podcast. I don't know. We don't have any merch. But yeah, I digress here. But the reason why we are here, and not because we waited about 10 months to actually talk about this film, is the critic score. Over at Metacritic, this film has a meta score of 27. And over at Rotten Tomatoes, the audience score is 30%. The Tomatometer is slightly more than the cost of one ticket in Australia. It's a 12% critic score. Yeah. Ugh. I know. I get it. Move. I know. Meow. Anyways, are you surprised at the 12%?
I am. It's a good movie. It's fun. It's quirky. It's like, it was super enjoyable. And the cast, the stellar cast.
Right?
So come on, I'm ready. Let's talk about this.
All right, let's get into the breakdown here as to who's in this film and as to why it's so good. We got to start with Mr. Johnny Depp, of course, as Mordecai.
Oh, he was adorable. He was just adorable. He was so likable. How could he have been nominated mm-hmm. for Worst Actor? Like, come on. He was, I mean, okay, Worst Actor in a foreign film or a foreign role. Okay, yeah, but that was the allure of it. Like, that's what made it funny and enjoyable and kind of quirky, kind of, there's a word for it. I'm
idiosyncratic?
No,
unique.
It was very Pink Panther, you know, when Steve Martin was trying to pull off the French Inspector
Clouseau.
Right? Like, come on. It was, and again, there's a word I'm looking for, can't find it, but,
Yeah, I know.
Words
fail.
Words are tough.
Okay, but hear me out on this one here, okay? And by the way, you mentioned Pink Panther, okay? The Steve Martin one.
Yes.
Rotten Tomatoes score 21%.
Oh, we are talking about that next.
Like next? I'm, or next in 10 months from now?
Either way, I'm throwing the gauntlet down. Come on, people.
but
what the hell, man?
I think, And I'll get to my thoughts on Johnny Depp in the actual film in a second here, but let me paint a picture for you, okay? Let me.
That's what it's all about.
Let me Bob Ross this, okay?
Because he's an art.
I feel like I now need to talk quiet now. I'm going to sit here and painting a lovely little picture here with some little accidents, little happy accidents. Now
they're birds.
Now, dear wife, we have to understand the world of Johnny Depp at this point. Okay, I'm done with the Bob Rossing of this shit here. But let me paint the picture of Depp's career at this point. This film comes after a long stretch of films that were maligned by the critics, including The Lone Ranger, where he played Tonto. Johnny Depp was Tonto. Let me say that again. Johnny Depp was Tonto. He was also in Tusk, the Kevin Smith film. Yeah, he was also in Alice in Wonderland and Dark Shadows, all of which did not fare well when it came to the critic scores, despite what people may have thought, like what the fans may have thought of them. Now, I've never actually watched Tusk. I've watched Yoga Hosers, and he's in that too. But it's a weird stretch. But keep in mind too, this is also during the engagement to Amber Heard.
I blame Amber Heard. I was gonna say.
And
I'm sorry.
And like the month after Mordecai came out, that's when they got married. Now, I need to also preface this with, as we are talking about this film, I'm going to put a very, very big, in highlighter neon colors, I don't give a shit about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard and their relationship and the end of their relationship. I don't. Not when it comes to talking about films. Okay, I don't care about the personal life. I care about, did he do well in this film? The answer is yes, he did do very well in this film. But there's a bit of a been there, done that feel to this, but not with Johnny Depp. I was getting some hardcore Austin Powers vibes off of his portrayal of Mordecai. And by this point, Austin Powers has been running to the ground. We've been there. We've done that.
See, I can see that. But again, for me, it was more Pink Panther.
I can get the Pink Panther. I do. I can. And if those properties didn't exist, this would be a ton of fun.
Or even like Johnny English, but not so much because this one was very different.
Johnny English. The biggest thing about Johnny English is like Mr. Bean becomes a Secret Service agent with the girl who sang Torn.
Now, can I just say, like, what makes an art dealer qualified to solve a murder mystery? Really?
But it's not a murder mystery, though. Like, the thing with this painting is that there's this secret, apparently, in the painting that leads to some kind of treasure, which is why everyone's trying to get this painting.
I know, but let's not overlook the fact
that there's a dead person.
The artist was offed while making the painting. So,
exactly.
You know, that had to make it more valuable.
The artist was meowed. There, I said it again. By the way, Johnny English, 33% Rotten Tomatoes score.
So clearly I am here to defend like the worst of the worst movies.
but I mean, I understand why you liked this film. This is a very Carrie movie.
It really is. It really is.
The thing I like about this is that when we think about Johnny Depp, you know, we think about, aside from Captain Jack Sparrow, right? We think about some very serious roles. And
I don't.
Okay, some should. I mean, Edward Scissorhands was not necessarily a serious role, but he played it very stoically.
And Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, it's a little out there too. Okay, so maybe we just think about Tim Burton films.
When I think of Johnny Depp, I don't think comedy, and I don't think dark humor.
I don't think goofy comedy.
I tend to think, again, more in line of like the very dark comedy. Like I'm talking like the Edward Scissorhands. Like, I mean, even The Nightmare Before Christmas, he voiced that, right?
I think so. But basically, you think of anything that Tim Burton would do, and I get that. But the thing is, this is a fun, goofy, playful, bright, like...
I think he was just marvelous in this,
almost
though.
Slapstick.
He was clearly, like, it was evident that he was having fun with this character and in this role.
It felt like a classic British style comedy.
It was fun.
Yeah. And the thing is, classic British slapsticky kind of humor is not what I think of when I think Johnny Depp. And
yeah. Again, the parallel again for Rowan Atkinson and Johnny English, because
But also the Austin Powers references too. Like you can't sit there and say you don't see maybe a little bit of Austin Powers in Mordecai in the portrayal of him. But the thing is, if Austin Powers didn't exist, or if you've never watched the Austin Powers movies, then Mordecai is a breath of fresh air. And that's kind of what you almost have to do. You almost have to have a palate cleanse and put thoughts of other characters out of your mind. Although that being said, I am really now curious to read those books, because I have a feeling they'd be a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're written like the script played out, oh my God. And that's the thing. I've never read these books, you know, and I wonder if the people who critique the movie went and read the books so they can then sit there and compare. And for the record, ladies and gentlemen, just know that the book is always better than the film.
I was going to say that's a very dangerous prospect, because mm-hmm. as soon as you start comparing the novelization to the movie, it's game over usually for the film.
And
usually.
The thing is, we have talked about some films on this show where the book is, you know, either pretty close, but there's a lot of very, very different. I always flash back to The Circle. There were parts of the script of The Circle that felt like cut and paste right from the book. And then you get to the end and it's like, did you finish reading the book? Because I'm watching the film and I don't think you finished reading the book. I am going to be looking for these books whenever we go book shopping, you know, which is for me every other day, it seems like. Like, not even kidding. We have extra soundproofing in our recording studio here. Brand new. It's called extra bookshelves because I had book overflow in my office and I had trouble getting in and out of the damn room.
And remember the time that they fell?
Yeah.
And I honestly was afraid for you.
It's like a book trap.
I thought you'd be pinned in there.
Yeah. I literally had books stacked up like booby traps in there. By the way, I'm going to break your brain for a second here, okay? Booby trap. Spell it backwards. Party boob. You can't now not think about it, can you?
Right.
Okay, I have completely gone on a different tangent here. Let's get back on Mordecai Road here. Now let's talk about Gwyneth Paltrow, who played Joanna. How was she for you?
Oh my God, she was adorable. In fact, I enjoyed her relationship with Mordecai more. This is going to be controversial. Get ready for the phone lines to light up. I'm about to break the internet.
But we have phone lines?
We
barely have internet some days.
I enjoyed her relationship with Mordecai more than Tony Stark, Mr. Iron Man.
Oi.
Uh-huh.
Oi.
Yep. I did. So, can you deal with that?
You're telling me.
I broke the internet. Yes, I did. All opinions expressed are those of my own. Do not necessarily reflect reality.
It's a good thing no one listens to this show. People would be writing in saying, there's someone on the internet who's wrong. That person is you.
Bring it on.
I like the interplay between the two. And I can see parallels in the relationship between Pepper Potts and Tony Stark and between Joanna and Mordecai here. It's a very playfully adversarial relationship, if you will. And yes, the whole she can't kiss his mustache without it causing her to want to regurgitate. And then of course he has a sympathetic vomit reflex.
I get it.
which this is a tough movie to watch because Carrie also has a sympathetic vomit reflex. So they would kiss and she would retch and he would retch and she would almost retch, and it's like, oh dear God, it's the movie is triggering for her in ways that she didn't want to be triggered.
Hey, I have had a mustache hair stuck in my tooth, okay, in between my teeth. It's the worst. Believe me.
So stop biting me.
I get it. Quit losing facial hair.
Stop flossing with my cheek.
It's creepy, yo.
Stop shaving at your desk. I get it. See, this is because no one listens. We can say whatever the hell we want. And it's okay.
Quit shaving over my toothbrush, for God's sake.
Okay. I want to put a question to you, though. And maybe part of this is why people, or at least critics, were poo-pooing on the film. Mordecai and Joanna, they live in Britain. And should be very British, but Gwyneth Paltrow was not British. Now there's Johnny Depp, but he kind of pulled it off a little bit.
Okay.
No. But here's the thing. If they were, the producers were successful and they had gotten Carice Van Houten in that role, do you think that with a British actress in that role, it would have been more believable?
No. I think that's ridiculous. That's like saying that everybody who lives somewhere has to have that nationality's accent. She could be an American girl that moved there because she fell in love with Mordecai and they met somewhere in Los Angeles. Like,
they met in college.
Okay, well, what, you've never heard of exchange students traveling for college?
Fair enough. And
come on.
Her nationality was never really discussed in the film, so it's possible. And again, never read the book, so maybe Joanna is American, and I could be completely wrong.
And I totally think if Gwyneth Paltrow had tried to throw on a fake British accent,
she could have pulled it off.
It would have been bad. No.
The thing is, I like Gwyneth Paltrow as a comedic actress. Like, and again, here's another actress who is very well known for some of her more serious roles. Of course, first ones come to mind are like Sliding Doors or Great Expectations. She's a phenomenal actress. I don't know if I'd consider Iron Man as a serious role because that's just fun comic booky kind of stuff.
I do see her as more of playful comedy.
But she, I was about to say, even though I don't see her necessarily normally in those playful comedy roles, she fits it like a glove. And I think, and again, the banter between the two, like, it was good chemistry between Depp and Gwyneth Paltrow in this.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
Very much. I adored the couple. Like, I thought they were perfect.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have changed it. I don't think I would have thrown a fake accent on her. And
no, definitely not. And that's the thing. If she was pulling the accent, then maybe it's one of those things where the only thing people would hear is the accent. And I get that.
Yeah. I mean, she was very much the brains of the relationship. and it was just adorable.
If she was the brain, she'd figure out a way to shave the mustache off.
Oh, no. Because, I mean, his mustache was clearly his identity. It was his calling card. It was perfect.
It was his shield. It was his shield and his sword. Ewan McGregor, freaking Obi-Wan Kenobi in this. How was he for you?
So much fun. You know what? All the actors played their role so incredibly well. He was good.
Can I say that there were aspects of his portrayal of Obi-Wan in this role? He was fun and charming, and it would not have been out of place had he walked into a room and said, "Hello there."
That's what I was waiting for every single time. Like, come on.
Right. But the thing is, Ewan McGregor makes sense to me, and the role was tailor-made for him. And again, the fact that he loves Joanna, and of course, Mordecai loves Joanna because that's his wife, and, you know, he pined for her in college before she hooked up with Mordecai. Like, it makes for an interesting dynamic between the three of them. And it's almost like, and just hear me out on this one here, because we've been watching Lucifer for quite a while, right? So if Mordecai is Lucifer, right? And if Gwyneth Paltrow is Lauren German's character, Ewan McGregor is Espinoza. Which, by the way, if you're not watching Lucifer, what is wrong with you people? Go watch Lucifer.
Oh, definitely. Definitely not a contender to talk about on this show because
It's a show.
It's
not
fantastic.
A movie.
Fantastic.
Right.
Can I just say, like, I am so happy that Joanna wound up with Mordecai.
Well, she had to be.
I found he was just, I don't know. I mean, as far as like, he's still holding that flame. He was kind of
wishy-washy.
I found him weaselly.
A little bit.
He was weaselly.
He was.
He was.
Not a weaselly.
No.
But...
you. Every time you see him, you question his motives.
Yeah, he wasn't ginger, so he wasn't a weaselly. But he was having fun.
Yes.
And I love
But he was perfect.
Yeah.
He was perfect as
a
weaselly.
But it was a dashing fun because the thing is, you know, college Ewan McGregor in this movie was like, that was very wishy-washy. You know, now that he's, you know, grown up and he's become an inspector at MI5, he's got a little bit of swagger and he's got a little bit of importance. He's trying to throw that around a little bit. And, you know, it's kind of fun to watch him try and throw that around.
Can I just, without, you know, completely spoiling the movie, because please do watch it. But I was so happy that it ended the way it did, because there was a point watching this with the dynamic of the relationship mm-hmm. between Joanna and Mordecai. And I was like, you almost tend to wonder where this is going. Is it sincere? You know, and then that whole, again, you know, introduce Obi-Wan, right? You know, I mean, it could have gone either way, but it all was well and all ended as it was meant to be.
I'm glad you brought up the whole Iron Man thing. Because now we get to talk about Paul Bettany, who of course was Jock in this, which apparently in the book, the character's name is Jacques Strap.
Ah, yes.
But in the movie, of course, they just call him Jock. And of course, Paul Bettany, as we all know, is the voice of Jarvis and he's Vision. So yes, Jock, more Marvel characters in this here. How was Jacques for you?
Well, finding out that his name should have been Jacques Strap. I feel somewhat robbed now. I might not be here to defend this movie because I think that was an epic fail. However,
I'll get you the books.
Exactly. I would love to read it. I'm intrigued. Sorry, you asked me about the character.
Yes. I mean, see, no one's listening and you're not listening. So we have achieved voidness here, people.
Here I'm all about defending
his
movie name.
But yes, Sir Jacques Strap. I loved him in this. The fact that it's Paul Bettany makes it even more fun, especially now where Paul Bettany's career has gone as Vision. But the thing is, This was where the slapstick humor really came into play. Like, there were moments with Jacques in here that you were howling because I know you love when people get run over and hit by cars and knocked around. There's something not wrong with my wife if these are the things that she's laughing at, but I get it and I appreciate it anyways.
It's so true. The physical humor, like, was completely on point. It was so funny.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, and dear listeners, you have to understand, when someone in a comedy movie gets hit by a car and they fly, she's going to laugh.
I'm all for it.
Like, I'm starting to wonder if you watch traffic cams for fun.
No, they're boring. However,
takes a while for the comedy to happen. But when it does, clear your day. But no, he was fun because he played it so straight and because he played it so serious, right? He wasn't cracking quips. And that allowed Mordecai to be the comedic element. It was a very Abbott and Costello kind of dynamic between the two.
I think that almost makes it funnier. It almost makes it funnier. It's like, you know what? Allow the comedy to happen around you. You know, I mean,
you can go one of two ways. You can be the center of the comedy and have everyone else around you play it straight, which is kind of what happened with this film, right? Mordecai was the joke. Mm-hmm. And everyone around was the straight actor. And at other times, like when we were talking about The Ridiculous Six, and I can't believe I'm bringing up an Adam Sandler movie, meow. But anyways, he played it straight and everyone around him was the comedy. And that's kind of the two ways you kind of have to go. In this case, Mordecai was the center of the comedy and Jock was a really good straight man to that. Mm-hmm. Plus, he bounces well. Olivia Munn as Georgina, who was Jeff Goldblum's wife and part of the crime duo that was also trying to get the painting. How was she for you?
I mean, she was great. All of the actors were so great and offered so much to the movie. Like, just the way their interactions. I mean, again, I love when you just don't kind of know. You don't know which way this is going to go.
Mm.
Thoughts?
I do have thoughts. I don't disagree, like, because I think Olivia Munn was good in the role. Don't get me wrong. But I think it was a waste of Olivia Munn. I mean, hear me out here. I think Olivia Munn is a very, very good actress. Loved her in The Newsroom. As much as the movie was maligned, I liked her in X-Men Apocalypse. And I remember when she used to be on shows like Attack of the Show. And going out and doing like all the geek news stories and stuff like that. So I know Olivia Munn can be funny. I know she's a good actress. This role, the role itself, could have been played by anybody. Because it was basically played as sexy temptress who was also, you know, secretly a villain as well. And I think the actor was bigger than the shoes she was playing.
Or do you think she just didn't bring enough to the table?
Well, there's also the theory that if you have too many characters and too many curveballs to throw, that there can't be enough screen time for the everybody. Like, I think looking at this film, the Russians, the Yakuza, like the everyone trying to find this painting, it's a lot of people in this film that it's given just enough screen time to make them interesting enough, but not enough screen time to flush it out.
But it blended well. It wasn't like it was all done in chapters. It all blended in. Which, again, made the storyline even more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It intertwined.
I think it's because I like Olivia Munn as an actress, and I wanted to see more of her in this. And I felt like they kind of offed her pretty quick. Oh, spoiler alert. Sorry. If you listen to this show by now, like, we're over 100 episodes in. You know what we're going to do.
Yeah, but I don't think she was, and it's not her fault, not that it wasn't deserving, but I don't think her character was needed.
No, and that's what I'm saying. It was an extra curveball that didn't need to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, for her to have been there and introduced, yes, that was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that she needed to overstay her welcome.
I think here's the other thing, too. Georgina was there to create tension between Mordecai and Joanna. And that's all she needed to be. Having her all of a sudden pop up and say, oh, surprise, I'm also a villain looking for this painting. It's like, no. Georgina serves one role, to get Mordecai on his heels as Joanna comes to America to put an end to all that, let me tell you, kind of thing.
See, I kind of felt more like that was Obi-Wan's role, was to create tension. Like, really, you know, because they had the history there.
But the thing is, Ewan McGregor was there to, you know, make Mordecai question the strength of the relationship. Georgina was there to make Joanna question the strength of the relationship.
No, I get that, but it was too much going on.
Tell me it wouldn't have been poetic symmetry if Ewan McGregor and Levima ended up together at the end of the film. The two people who were pining for the others ended up together.
I mean, that would have been an interesting...
plot twist. Dun, dun, dun. I don't know. I think Georgina had a role. I don't think it was a big role. I think it was enough. I think they curveballed it a little too much. And I think Olivia Munn is too good for a small role. But again, that's but just
about,
me.
What about Jeff Goldblum? Oh, he was necessary.
Freaking Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, but I...
all things are better with Jeff Goldblum.
I mean, you would have had to end their relationship to have done that.
But the thing is, the Jeff Goldblum, Olivia Munn relationship didn't need to be a relationship. It could have just been a business partnership.
True.
Right? Jeff Goldblum is a freaking gem. First of all, like
he doesn't need anybody. He doesn't. Is fantastic.
And the thing is, the role he's playing as Krumpf, he can just be Jeff Goldblum. And it's perfect. Yeah. Like, it should have been Mordecai according to Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, I love it.
Right? But the thing is, it's just enough Jeff Goldblum, right? It doesn't dominate everything because there's all these different parts that are being played, and all of a sudden, Mordecai's still the central figure. Jeff Goldblum is just like a cherry on the top of the cake here.
And I get so excited when he's introduced. I'm like, yes, this is... This movie is amazing. Oh, thanks to Jeff Goldblum.
The thing is, though, Jeff Goldblum is fun, and it's a great little shot of adrenaline to the comedy bone when you get to that point of the film. It's Mordecai. It's all about Mordecai, right? Jeff Goldblum's a great little pit stop. Don't get me wrong. And it was the perfect amount of Jeff Goldblum. I think if you put Jeff Goldblum in more than he was, it would have been overshadowing Mordecai. So I think it was the perfect amount of Goldblum. Mm-hmm. By the way, this is the most Marvel, non-Marvel movie I think we've covered in a while, right? Because think about it, right? You've got Jeff Goldblum, right, from Thor Ragnarok. You have Olivia Munn, who played Psylocke in X-Men Apocalypse. You've got Vision. You've got Pepper Potts, right? like when is Ewan McGregor going to be in Marvel?
By the way, we need some Johnny Depp.
I'd be curious who Ewan McGregor or Johnny Depp could play in Marvel. That would be a fun, fun fan cast at that point. Hmm. I mean, it's got to happen at some point.
Who's left to cast?
I think Marvel has hired all the actors by this point. Like all the actors at this point. And they've even doubled up. Like some actors in Marvel, in the MCU, have played two different roles. So they're clearly starting to run out of actors here. So, we've gone through the actors, and I think it was well directed. So, what went wrong with this film? So, put yourself in the role of the critic here, right? Try to enter the critic's mind, and I'm sorry if that hurts you or anything. Try to put yourself in the critic's mind. What was it that they were seeing when they poo-pooed on this film?
Expectation. They probably went into it with higher expectations because of the list of actors, the caliber of talent. And I'm not quite sure what more they were expecting because everybody played their parts brilliantly. Mm-hmm. It was funny. It was enjoyable to watch. There was really, truly nothing that I have negative to say about this movie. There's nothing that I would have changed. Although I love your suggestion about the, you know, romantic between intertwining of the,
yeah, but Olivia Munn's dead now, so yeah.
You know, but I mean, again, it was fine as it is. Yeah. Like,
and this is what baffles me, right? Like, sometimes when you go in and you watch a movie that's you know qualifies for this show, and you can legitimately see things and sit there and go, okay, I understand why it qualifies. I don't understand why it's so low, but I understand why it qualifies. With this film, and for what it is, like, it's a comedy. It's a goofy-ass comedy. And it's a fun, goofy-ass comedy. And so I don't know, you know, you take a look at it, 12%. Like, this film should be bombing. Like, the joke shouldn't be landing. It should be boring as hell. It should be one of those films where you sit there and go, no. It's freaking funny. Everything, like, you find yourself laughing consistently through the film. Mm-hmm. It's a fun one. So if they're crapping on the film because Johnny Depp, why? If you're crapping on the film because it's just a goofy little comedy that Austin Powers did better, why?
Again, you can't compare them. They're not like the same storyline.
No, they're not the same storylines, but I think you could draw parallels between the way Mike Myers portrayed Austin Powers and the way Johnny Depp portrayed Mordecai. There is a similarity, if you will.
That's literally like saying you're going to compare, I don't know, like, oh, what was that? American Psycho to, I don't know, like the Joker or like, you know what?
I could draw a comparison.
Okay, but that's literally like comparing two movies with very similar, plot lines? And like, really? for what it is.
Would you draw a stronger comparison between Steve Martin's Inspector Clouseau?
Well, again, you know, it did pop in my mind and I did mention it. Mm-hmm. However, as a standalone movie, it was enjoyable. Yeah. I would watch it again.
I mean, I can see the Pink Panther one because, of course, the Pink Panther is usually about some kind of jewelry or art kind of heist. And in that, you have Jean Reno, who very much plays the Jacques parallel, if you will. Like, there are parallels. And whenever you go into a film, and I do understand your argument about the weight of expectation. Right? This is a stellar cast. Like, a stellar cast. So when you go into a film with this kind of cast, you expect the world. And it's a good director, and it's based on a book. It has all the hallmarks that says this should work, and it does work, but the critics didn't see it. And I never understand why a movie this good gets so maligned.
I can't understand. I mean, I think it's funny to nominate, you know, Johnny Depp and his mustache. That's funny.
That is funny.
However, I mean, to say that the acting was bad or they didn't play their parts well, mm-hmm, is unfair. Now, refresh my memory. When was Iron Man released?
2008.
More specifically, the building relationship with Peppa Potts.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you think about it, right? So Iron Man came out in 2008. If I remember correctly, Iron Man 2 came out in 2010. Okay. So you have, or maybe 2009, I could be wrong on that one.
However,
but regardless, the Pepper Potts character has been developed by this point. And yes, Iron Man 3 would have come out shortly after the first Avengers film, which that came out in 2010. So, no, 2012, I think. So we've got our Pepper Potts
enough filled. Time though for the comparisons to be drawn.
Yeah, and I can see that. I do
so
see that.
So that, I mean, that's unfair to begin with. Like,
and maybe that's the thing, right? Is that people are looking at Mordecai and this cast and saying, well, you could sit there and point to this and this and this and this and this, and it feels like almost a Franken film of different parts of different films, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the Franken film, if that's how you're looking at this, is bad. Frankenstein's monster is not a villain. He's just misunderstood. So maybe that's the thing. Mordecai isn't a bad film. It's just misunderstood.
I absolutely agree. Drop the mic right there because I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah. Why, thank you. Meow. Anyways, it is now time to wrap this up here because apparently I've been told to drop the mic, which I'm not dropping these mics. They're good mics. Carrie, who is your meow VP of Mordecai?
I enjoyed all the actors equally. I just have to put that out as a disclaimer. But I'm going to go with Johnny Depp because he carried the movie on his marvelous mustache.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so enjoyable to watch him clearly, like, the fun he was having in this role was so evident that you just can't help but enjoy watching it.
Oh yeah, he was a lot of fun.
It was so much fun.
He's not my MVP though.
Oh no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have to go with Monsieur Jacques Strop. Paul Bettany is my MVP on this one here. And I think it's because his straightness in comparison to Mordecai's goofiness in this.
I would have lost money. I thought you were going to go with Ewan McGregor.
No. For a while, I thought I was going to as well. But the thing is, Paul Bettany being so serious in this makes Mordecai's goofiness that much better.
Hmm.
Right? Sometimes you need that character to propel the main character.
For the record, though, I really wanted to vote for Jeff Goldblum. I really did. But
the thing is, there wasn't enough Jeff Goldblum in there to make it work.
But I think there was just enough. Again, he's there for...
He's there for a good time, shock not value, for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's there for that moment, like, this is going to be good because Jeff Goldblum's in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and that was it. That was all you need.
Jeff Goldblum, to me, in this, is the equal amount of screen time to impact ratio that Stan Lee had in Mallrats. Where, again, there for a good time, not for a long time, and just enough. Anything more would have taken away from the main characters.
You know what? I think Jeff Goldblum should be the ongoing, like, rest in peace, Stan Lee. I really do miss the
cameos.
The cameos, exactly. The appearances. So let's keep it going with Jeff Goldblum. And he can just have, like, he could even be, you know, buying a hot dog on a street from a, you know, street meat vendor, and, you know, and it would make the entire movie. You know, like, we don't need a lot of Jeff Goldblum, just enough to be like, oh, there he is, and he can continue and carry on that. No,
now, Marvel has many other things that they have to do at this point. So, but
Jeff Goldblum, make it happen.
Oh, more Jeff Goldblum. I mean, it's always a thing.
Johnny Depp, that could be his role going forward in the Marvel universe. He could be the special appearance.
As what, a watcher? Maybe. Maybe. I have thoughts on who he would be. I would love for our listeners to chime in on social media and Not That Badcast and let us know who you think Johnny Depp and Ewan McGregor should be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Just, I'd be fascinated to hear that. Just hit us up at Not That Badcast on social media. Carrie, thank you.
By the way, since we're making suggestions for Marvel, Squirrel Girl needs to happen.
Oh my God, yes.
Make it so. Anna Kendrick, Squirrel Girl.
You think?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Would you make her ginger?
Yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. You'd have to cut her hair though. Or wigs. Yeah.
Georgia Tennant.
Ooh. Oh, I would love that.
With the red hair that she had from season 3.
Well, no, because, the strawberry blonde wouldn't work for the character, but I could totally see her face would be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just get like a short cropped red wig.
So, Georgia Tennant, star of Staged, please become Squirrel Girl. Make it happen.
That would be amazing.
Yes, make it happen.
Let's manifest that. Let's
right?
Put it out into the internet or into the universe and make it happen.
I don't know how we turned an episode about Mordecai into a Marvel fan cast, but here we are. And here we are at the end of the show. Carrie, thank you so much for this. And to you, our listeners, you guys know the drill. If there is a movie out there that you think is unfairly maligned or you think is so bad in meow that we can't find anything good to say about it, hit us up on social media at Not That Badcast or go to our website at notthatbadcast.com. And while you are there, make sure you check out our coming soon page and see what movies we are eventually getting around to talking about, like this one. as well as check out our other shows, There Can Only Be One, and our episodes of Keep Watch Pass and Grading on a Curve. Until next time, Carrie, you're lovely. Listeners, you are lovely. Mustaches, you're lovely too. This is It's Not That Bad. Take care.